Our gospel this morning is from the 8th chapter of St. John. Now Jesus said to the Jews who had believed in him, "If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free." They answered him, "We are descendants of Abraham and have never been slaves to anyone. What do you mean by saying you will be made free?" Jesus answered them, "Very truly I tell you, everyone who commits sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not have a permanent place in the household. The son has a place there forever. So if the son makes you free, you will be free indeed." This is the gospel of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You may be seated. As many of you know, Krista and I and our kids lived in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia for 13 years. One of our favorite roads through the valley was the old Route 11 from Roanoke to Winchester, rather than I-81, just a far more interesting road to travel, where you'd encounter small towns and villages, old gas stations without digital meters, silos that dot the landscape, a proud church in the middle of a town, the meandering curves and forks of the Shenandoah River. Along Route 11, you'll find George Washington's headquarters and Woodrow Wilson's birthplace. You'll discover the Luray and Endless and the Skyline Caverns. You'll meet people who knew Patsy Cline, and you might even dip your feet into the waters of the Harper's Ferry. Once known as the Great Wagon Road, it brought hordes of immigrants at one time from Scotland and Germany and other places, of course, Presbyterians and Lutherans and Methodists all the way from Pennsylvania into what we would know as the Yadkin Valley of North Carolina. One was a hero named Peter Muhlenberg. Muhlenberg was the pastor of Emmanuel Lutheran Church in Woodstock, Virginia, and he was the son of Henry Muhlenberg, who was an interesting character because widely considered the father of Lutheranism in North America. He was an immigrant himself, having been born in Germany, but wanted to give it a shot in this great land. Well, as a young man, his son, Peter Muhlenberg, developed a very close friendship with George Washington and became, over time, a key leader in his growing community. Eventually, that community was Woodstock in Virginia. Now, throughout Peter's life, he honored the church's tradition of seeking peace and justice for all. But, if you might remember, soon there will be war that is brewing, and it became more and more obvious, rage that was filling that countryside, the Shenandoah Valley and beyond. And Muhlenberg, as a community leader, had some big decisions to make. Washington, as it turns out, asked him to join the cause and to command Virginia's 8th Regiment. But his community of Woodstock was very divided. His brother, in fact, was a pacifist until his own church was burned to the ground by British forces, and Muhlenberg had had enough. It's January 21st, 1776. Pastor Muhlenberg took his sermon text from the 3rd chapter of Ecclesiastes. He climbed up into the pulpit and began with these words, "To everything there is a season," that familiar text, "a time to be born and a time to die, a time to plant and a time to pluck what has been planted, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to be silent and a time to speak, a time to tear and a time to mend, a time of war and a time of peace." At which point Muhlenberg put his text down. He looked up into his congregation and he said, "And this, my friends, is a time for war." Dramatically, in that very moment, he removed his clerical robe to reveal a colonel's uniform. Outside the door, the drums began to roll. Men, moved by their pastor's challenge, turned to kiss their wives and then walked down the aisle to enlist. Within half an hour, 162 men were enrolled. The next day, 300 men from the area joined Muhlenberg to form the nucleus of the 8th Virginia Regiment. To this day, Route 11 will take you by Muhlenberg's 250-year-old church. And then in the middle of town, you'll run across that life-size statue of Muhlenberg removing his robe, inviting his community to the call of freedom. Freedom that has demanded the courage of men and women throughout our history so that we might enjoy the blessings of freedom and liberty. Today, then, today is a day of celebrating our nation, its history, the heroes that made it all happen and the principles they fought to preserve. And for that reason, it's significant that we honor the 4th of July even in worship so that we can give thanks for freedom, celebrate our liberty, but most importantly, of course, to pray that God will guide and direct our country's path. For most of us, if we're honest, the pursuit of liberty has been rather easy. I've never lived through a world war, for example. None of us, is my guess, none of us have lived through a revolution or a bloody civil conflict in which brother fought against brother. I haven't lived the life of a slave. I haven't faced the questioning of an immigrant desperate to find a new home in these United States. For me, freedom is something that I've taken for granted, something, quite honestly, that has just been given to me by those who have gone before me. And so I believe that one of the most important things that we can do in a week like this, a week that we will commemorate and celebrate a 4th of July, is to acknowledge it as a day of national remembrance, to remember that freedom has come with great cost and with great responsibility. Our reading this morning is from a first century letter to the Christian churches in Galatia, or what is present-day Turkey. In the 5th chapter, St. Paul writes about freedom using his favorite two words, but now. Listen to what he writes. He says, "We once were dead, but now we are alive. We once were lost, but now we are found. We once were slaves, but now we are children of God. We once were bound by the law, but now we are free. Now, because of Jesus Christ, who has freed us from the power of sin and death so that we might enjoy new life, we are granted this freedom for all of eternity, right? But the freedom that Christ secured, of course, came with a great cost, which is why freedom for the Christian, Martin Luther says, comes with great responsibility. Thus, verse 13 in our text today, you are free, brothers and sisters. He wanted to convince them at the bottom of their heart and every inch of their soul, you are free. But do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. Now that would be a great verse to memorize, don't you think, this week? I mean, for all of us to commit to memorizing that beautiful verse from Galatians chapter 5, verse 13, that Paul is begging and placing upon us, you are free, he says to us, brothers and sisters. Only do not use your freedom as an opportunity for self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another. Wouldn't it be amazing if the houses of government, if Congress, if the House of Representatives and our senators would begin each and every day with those words, right? You are free. And so let us together commit not to using our freedom for the sake of self-indulgence, but through love become slaves to one another, to act with each and every step with a heart of humility. Because we are free not for our own sake, Paul says, but for the sake of our neighbor, for the sake of building up a community of peace and justice and goodwill. That's the point of Paul's message when he writes, don't use your freedom only to indulge yourself, but use your freedom to show love and goodwill to all. Representatives to the First Continental Congress serve as a perfect example. Men from all but one of the 13 colonies arrived. They were facing threat of treason and execution just by showing up, but they showed up nevertheless. But they were bound. They were bound and determined to promote their understanding of justice and equality for all, and nothing was going to stand in their way. As they entered Carpenter's Hall in Philadelphia, it's interesting. They chose that day to sit in a circle so that all would be considered equal and so that every voice would be heard. Now, think about that. These men of incredible significance, men who would be dramatic and remarkable leaders in our country's history, they began by sitting in a circle so that they could humble themselves, they could listen as much as they could speak. Men like George Washington and John Adams, Patrick Henry, John Rutledge, Samuel Adams, Peyton Randolph, Benjamin Harrison, who, by the way, whose son and great-grandson became presidents of the United States, at great cost and with great humility, these men set the course of our country's future. Susan B. Anthony did the same. Another great example, living in an era when women were not afforded the same rights as men. It's July 4th, 1876. It's the 100th anniversary of this Declaration of Independence. And she was determined to speak where it all began, at Independence Hall in Philadelphia. But she was not allowed. Why? Because she was a woman. But that was not going to stop her. Instead, she printed and delivered copies of what would have been her speech, and she passed them around, distributed them around, all around Philadelphia, in particular to anyone who was in the Independence Hall area that day. Then she chose to go to the back of Independence Hall, and she offered a rousing speech about equality to a fast-growing crowd. Or what about the soldiers of Gettysburg? On July 2nd, 1863... a three-day battle began. Incredible, really, the scope of this battle. 160,000 men would fight in what would become the most important battle in American history, and the bloodiest battle as well. Of those 160,000, there were 51,000 casualties, which means that one out of every three men who began the battle would not fight again. Had they not fought, you understood, had they not fought, this nation would have been lost. Christ Lutheran Church is in the heart of Gettysburg. During the great battle and for weeks afterward, the church was turned into a hospital where young men were brought in from the fields of battle, where they would lay for days on boards and set out across the backs of pews, where mostly women from throughout the countryside would come and nurse them in whatever way they knew how. To this day, bloodstains can be seen on those pews, the stains of freedom, marks of freedom's responsibility. As remarkable as that battle was, I'm just as interested in what happened 50 years later. July 2nd, 1913, which represented the 50th anniversary of the Battle of Gettysburg, when the Park Service invited soldiers from both sides, Confederate and Union, to gather once again on those hallowed fields. But there was a wee bit of worry about what might ensue, about how they might greet one another or not greet one another. But as it turned out, these men and women were far more eager to swap stories and share a meal together than anything else. 6,000 veterans were expected to participate, but on the morning of July 2nd, 21,000 arrived from everywhere. Even President Woodrow Wilson attended, and he said to the crowd these incredible words, "We have found one another again as brothers and comrades in arms, enemies no longer, generous friends, rather. Our battle's long past, the quarrel forgotten." At 12 noon, all who had gathered spent 5 minutes in silence as a bell tolled for those who had died, a reminder that freedom comes at great cost, and that freedom comes with great responsibility. Each 4th of July, and this will happen next year and years to come, I'm sure, but I return to the writings of a Frenchman, Alex de Tocqueville, who, after visiting America in 1831, wrote these words: "I sought for the greatness of the United States in her commodious harbors, her ample rivers, her fertile fields, and her boundless forests, and it was not there. I sought for it in her rich mines, her vast world commerce, her public school system, and in her institutions of higher learning, and it was not there. I looked for it in her Democratic Congress and her matchless Constitution, and it was not there. Not until I went into the churches of America and heard her pulpits flame with righteousness did I understand the secret of her genius and power. America is great because America is good. And if America ever ceases to be good, America will cease to be great." Friends, in our quest to make America great, may we never forget that we are first called to be good. In his second inaugural address, with the Civil War winding down, Abraham Lincoln offered these prophetic words, words that made sense to his country at a time at the end of war, the beginning of something new, who knows. But imagine how prophetic they are for us today, words that desperately need to be heard today in the halls of Congress and the airwaves of America. These words, with malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among ourselves, but also among all nations. Lincoln knew that our freedom as Christians and our freedom as Americans comes with great responsibility. And so we must be, you and I, bound and determined to finish the work that we are in, not for the sake of self or party or tribe, but for all. And so the question that comes to us today is a question that we beg of you, but a question I would invite you to ask each and every day. How will you use your freedom? In your work, in your play, in this community and beyond, how will you use your freedom? So today, the church celebrates the 4th of July, but of course not by painting God red, white, or blue. Not by claiming that God is more American than he is German or Italian or Mexican or Guatemalan, because he is not. We celebrate today because we love our country and we love our God. And so we set this day aside so that we can sing and pray and hope that the peace and love of Christ might be known throughout the land of the free, from sea to shining sea, from the redwood forest to the Gulf Stream waters, from the coast of Maine to the lakes of Minnesota, from the Dakota prairies to the Florida Keys, from the Grand Tetons to Mount Mitchell, from the Outer Banks to the Shenandoah Valley. We are free, free to love, free to care, free to comfort the disheartened, free to welcome the stranger, free to share God's love with a world that is desperate to know God's love. And to that, friends, may all of God's people say, amen. Amen.